Einstein's, so when he died, his brain got stolen. Let me ask you this, why should we even care about brain health? What should people listening give up if they want a healthy life and a healthy brain?
Is there a difference between plant protein and animal protein?
The first question I like to ask is, what are you excited about these days? What's exciting you?
I'm excited about many things. So first of all, I teach people primarily. That's what I feel like I am. I'm a scientist, but I'm also an educator. I teach people about the brain and about health and how they can perform better, think faster, and live longer. And every single day, I'm finding out something new and exciting about science and about health. And that's what excites me.
What was the last exciting thing specifically that you learned about?
Well, actually, you and I were just talking about cold plunges. And right now there is a real big uproar about this famous article or, you know, report that went out in Cell Reports to show the effectiveness of cold thermogenesis and how it affects the brain and how it affects the body. A lot of people are arguing that it was just an N of 8, which means that they only got a small population group. And so right now in the science space on Twitter and on Instagram, a lot of people are really arguing it. And so that's what I'm starting to really research and dig deep into. Well, what do we know scientifically in clinical data? What do we know about the cold water?
Well, it's like Wim Hof, his lane, right?
He
can tell us a lot about it. But like, he's done some incredible, he's broken records, right? Like climbing these mountains, like almost naked.
I don't have a desire to do that.
All right. So you teach people how to take care of themselves, specifically their brain, how to think faster, sharper, clearer. Let me ask you this. Why should we even care about brain health? Why should we care?
Well, that's an interesting question. So currently, worldwide, we have 50 million people that have Alzheimer's disease. So Alzheimer's disease is a neurodegenerative disease. And that number, that 50 million, is going to triple by the year 2050.
Wow.
So 150 million people with Alzheimer's disease. And that is really scary. I'll tell you why. Because 97% of the Alzheimer's disease cases right now are preventable.
97%.
That means that right now when you look, and we know this through GWAS analysis, when you look at Alzheimer's disease or you look at the people who have got 100% penetration, so 100% penetrant in terms of DNA, it's only 3%. So the people who are getting Alzheimer's disease, 3% of them have the genes responsible, but the 97% are getting it just because of lifestyle factors. And I keep thinking to myself, why is this? Are we going to blame the government? Are we going to blame the fact that we're just sedentary or we're too busy? I always bring it back to education. I just don't think that people really understand what it means to have a healthy performing brain and to starve off these neurodegenerative diseases. Because I do this in my everyday life, and I talk to those closest to me, my brother, my sister, my, you know, my cousins, and they still don't fully understand it. So well, I've got a lot of work to do.
Educating people. You mentioned a healthy functioning brain. I studied anthropology. And there's a culture that live in the Bolivian Amazon. They're called the Chimani. And the Chimani have the healthiest arteries, the cleanest arteries in the world. Some say they're immune to heart disease. So I love studying different cultures. Is there a culture that we can compare to the Chimani only with the brain? Is there a culture or society that has a healthy brain, a prototypical brain that we should be modeling after?
There was a very big study that was done on the APOE4 variant. So we know that there's around 30 different genes responsible for Alzheimer's disease. And the most prominent ones is this one called APOE4. And if you have one of them, one gene, you know, we get one gene from mom, one from dad. If we have one, then we're predisposed to getting Alzheimer's disease by, I think it's around four times. If you've got two, maybe it's seven times more likely to get it. It turns out that when they were doing this study, that there is a small part of the population in Africa, I forget whereabouts in Africa, who have two E4s, ApoE4, ApoE4, but they never get Alzheimer's disease. Why is that? Yeah.
Why is that?
Because they're doing things that we are not doing in America. The number one thing I think that is really important to point out is they're not stressed. They don't have the same level of stress that we do. They have the right level of stress, which is run after the lion, run away from the lion, go and hunt for your food. They don't have the modern day stress, the 2023 stress that we have. So that's one thing. The second thing is their food is much more, I don't even know how to put it. I don't even know what to talk about. Not processed. Real. It's real, but it's also not genetically modified. They're getting it from the ground. They're also walking a lot because they're not stuck on subways or in cabs. So they're doing the core fundamentals of what it means to delay the onset of these neurodegenerative diseases.
I read a book a while ago called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers.
Love it.
You know, and I think it was Robert Sapolsky. He talked all about, you know, the zebra, right? The zebra sees the lion and they're, you know, that fear, fight or flight comes, they run away, they're right there, everything's elevated, and then they run away, and then in a few minutes later, they're drinking, relaxed at a water hole, right? Stress on, stress off. But like you say, with us in this world today, it's stress on, stress on, stress on. And I know stress is a big part of physical health, mental, brain health. What are some scientific-based stress techniques that you use or that you might share with people who are who have a lot of stress in their life?
Yeah, so I have a lot of stress in my life as well, but I manage it to the best of my ability right now. The first thing I'm doing is I'm sleeping. And I know you may think, well, aren't we all sleeping? But I train for sleep like sleep is an Olympic game each night.
Whoa, okay. Yeah.
So what does that mean? That means that I'm eliminating bright light from the hours of 8 p.m. onwards. I have floor lighting in my apartment.
Okay.
I have a real structured supplementation routine. Yeah. So I'm having GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid to calm my mind down. I'm having magnesium, L-threonate. I'm eating dinner. So I'm not ingesting anything other than water and the supplements 2 hours, in a 2 hour window before bedtime.
Okay.
Not just that. This is what I actually don't hear a lot of people talking. I tell myself, hey, girl, you're going to sleep soon. Like things will come up on my phone. An email will come through. I don't check it because some things rile me up. If I check something in my business, it'll rile me up. I'm doing anything I can to calm myself down. So that's one thing I'm doing.
You don't turn it off. You just willpower, don't check it.
Willpower, don't check
it. Okay. Do you put any F.Lux or like the, do you change the luminosity of the phone to red?
I do, yeah.
You do that too? Okay.
I do. And it's a really good technique. So that's the sleep. The second thing that I do is I make sure I do 10 minutes a day of breathing. Breathing is one of the best ways to activate our parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest. So today, you would know this. I was stuck in traffic. I'm not from LA. I'm from New York. So this traffic it must cause stress to other people because it's caused stress to me. So I, you know what I did? I breathed.
Okay.
I was like, you know what? I can't control this. So I breathed, but you know, regardless of whether I'm in traffic, I'm doing breathing techniques to automatically get myself into a parasympathetic state.
Is it a certain technique? Is it like a certain count? Is it like a diaphragmatic breath or are you just consciously breathing?
No, I'm doing the box breathing.
Okay.
Yeah. So five breaths in, four out, and just repeating that. Or I'm doing a double inhale, exhale. And then I'm doing other things to stop myself from causing more inflammation. So let's talk about that. So, for example, we're in a sauna right now. Sauna and heat shock proteins are incredible for downregulating the cytokine storm, which is our inflammatory cytokines. I'm doing cold baths, which we spoke about. I do a cold bath around 4 to 5 times a week.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And you've noticed a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And then things such as like the foods that we eat can either be anti-inflammatory or pro-inflammatory. So bad foods like alcohol. I'm a no alcohol person.
Okay.
And I put this out there on social media and people get mad. But it turns out that no amount of alcohol is good for the body or the brain. So these things that
What about, and I'm just going to play devil's advocate here, right? You know, you got people in like the blue zones, Italy, or, you know, and they drink a little red wine, right? Polyphenols in the red wine. So is not enough to counteract the other things? Or?
And I get asked that question a lot. Mm. First of all, you can't get enough polyphenols in a glass of red wine. So we need to stop that talk. The red wine in Italy, these people also aren't exposed to environmental toxins, exposures in the air. They're not involved. They don't have the stress we have. If I was living in Italy, eating like them, drinking their clean water, not having the stress, then I could probably afford to have maybe a bottle of wine a week.
Okay. Kind of on this note of myths and, you know, things like that. I love Hippocrates, right? The father of medicine. And one of my favorite quotes from Hippocrates, he says, before you try to heal someone, ask them if they're willing to give up that which made them sick. What should people listening give up if they want a healthy life and a healthy brain?
Can I name a few things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. You've got to give up any form of smoking, whether it's marijuana, cigarettes. You have to give up alcohol, because we know that no amount of alcohol is good for the brain. One other thing, apart from you have to give up, you know, the sleep deprivation and the bad foods, whether it's bad seed oils or a lot of fat and cholesterol and sugar, we need more connection. There's more scientific literature in clinical studies coming out that having a longer life, which is living to 100, living well and living happy, has a lot to do with connection and social interaction. And this is something that we lose as we get older. We kind of become more recluse. So I wouldn't say that that's something that you have to give up, but I think it's something that we have to lean in towards more.
Yeah, connection's everything, right? Bees live in a hive. We were meant to live in a tribe. Loneliness is an epidemic, a silent epidemic, a silent killer.
Give up your seat as well.
Give up the seat.
This is what I mean.
Okay.
You know, we're spending a lot of time in front of our computers and we're sitting down for maybe 8 hours a day. And it's just wreaking havoc on our muscles and on our bones and on our heart. So if you can, either stand up at a standing desk or get one of those treadmill desks.
What about those like things where you can sit and cycle?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do that, but I think that's great too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What about sitting on an aerobic ball?
Well, that's still sitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So standing, being on your 2 feet,
mm-hmm.
standing desk. Okay. Or walking.
Yeah. So I'm going to expand on that just a little bit. Your brain health is very much dependent on vascular health. So our heart, you know, pumps the blood, and we have two main arteries that come out of the heart that go into the brain. You've got the vertebral arteries and you've got the carotid arteries, you know, just two here. And they go into the brain, and then we have branching of these little arteries.
Okay.
Now, arteries supply the brain with blood. And what does the blood do? It carries oxygen and nutrients to the brain. So these arteries, some of the little arteries in our brain, the capillaries, are one cell thick. So the moment that you are stressed, you are collapsing these tiny little arteries in your brain. So therefore, you're not going to get blood flow to that area of the brain if you collapse them and if they die off. So one of the best ways to keep getting blood pumped to your brain is through exercise, is through standing up. Best ways to get oxygen, breathing, having better cardiac output, having a strong heart. So, you know, that's why things such as exercise is so good for the brain. It's mainly because of the vascular health.
Do you have any chairs in your house?
Well, I do. I have a couch and I have some dinner table chairs.
Okay. Is there, and this is like a personal question for me, because I'm a nerd when it comes to this stuff, and everything you're saying about sleep, curating and architecting your environment in order to be conducive to the best sleep, I'm on it. Blackout curtains, sound machine next to the bed, snake plants, magnesium, blue light, red light glasses. I'm into it all, you know, cooling, you know, all of that good stuff. But when it comes to sitting, I know that it's not good. I say, you know, the chair is the new cigarette. What do you think about I know in certain Japanese cultures, they sit on the floor.
Yeah.
Sitting on the floor versus a chair. Is there a difference?
I'm not sure, but that's really interesting. I mean, I want to learn more about that because they do have some of the healthiest people in Japan and there is no epidemic of obesity there, right?
Mm.
They won't need the Ozempic there.
Yeah. Well, I think as the Western diets kind of reach these places, the levels of heart disease and obesity are kind of going with that. But yeah, I mean, Okinawa, right? That's one of the healthiest places in the world.
Yeah.
So what I know about, I know a little bit about the brain. And I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, this fact about the brain, but I heard that the brain, from the brain to the skull, the distance is about the size of a credit card, like the thickness of a credit card. Like it's not much space in between the brain and the skull. What do you think about sports like boxing, UFC? And I know you had some choice words for some new, I'm using air quotes, sport where people slap each other. What do you think about these sports?
I think that it's pure madness. Mm. We're walking ourselves into brain death with these sports. And I choose really not to work with NFL players because I know the disasters that, you know, just running and banging your head causes. Mm. Let me just tell you, you were right. Okay. So between your skull and your brain, you've got certain layers, but you've got fluid. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think that this fluid is viscous or protective, and it's not. It's just like water. It's literally just a thin layer of water, and you can crack your skull and get into your brain. And once you hit your brain, you have to remember, is like jello. It's soft. You can stick your fingers inside it. It's soft.
Yeah.
So you're going to go and hit it, and you're going to damage the blood vessels, A. Mm. Okay. You're going to mess up the metabolism. Mm. Okay, of your brain. So what happens when you hit it? Your brain inside your skull just goes boom, 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 and it hits. It gets smashed from side to side. And you're bruising your brain. And just like what happens during a stroke. So if you get a stroke, which is an infarct, which is loss of blood supply to a certain area of the brain, it gets occluded. It kills off neurons. Those neurons don't, I'm healing and I'm going to regenerate. They don't regenerate. They're dead.
Okay, they don't come back.
Yeah. And you're essentially saying to yourself, I'll just do the same when I get punched in the face. You're literally doing what my brother and I did growing up. And you're actually causing so much damage to, we've got cranial nerves. There's 12 of them, but one of them is the facial nerve and it comes off and it branches out like this. There's three endings and you just see the amount of edema. Like they slap each other's face and you've got your entire face is just like pushed out like this. I just think, what?
What's wrong with us? Is it just we don't have the knowledge? We're just obsessed with just more and more violence and craziness for money? Is it?
Or if it is, if people do have the knowledge and they choose to do it, then that's the consequences you have to suffer. But I really think that with more podcasts like this, we can teach people that you can live a long and healthy life if you just practice the things that are at the bottom of the pyramid. We call it neuroathletics, and it's the things that Mother Nature gave us. Practice good sleep hygiene. Exercise. Try and do every day. Try and do something every day that pumps blood around your body and to your brain. Eat nutritious food. Hydrate. Essentially, you know, hydrate. Try and stress less.
Okay. Box breathing, cold plunge, doing these like good stressful modalities is healthy. How you feeling? Well, you're not sweating too much.
I am.
You feel like, okay, I'm sweating.
Yeah, you are.
Oh my God. I like took a bath. All right, I got one more question for you before we get out of here. Like, what does a healthy brain look like? What kind of models under scans? And I would love for you to answer that. But Einstein's, so when he died, his brain got stolen. His brain and his eyes got stolen, I think, by the doctor. His name was like Thomas Harvey. And it cut his brain up into slices and tried to find out what was different, what was unique about this man's brain. One thing they found was like an abnormality, I guess, was he had a 15% larger parietal lobe than most people. But another thing that I think is very relevant to you, there was a pigment, lipofuscin, something like that, that was not there. That's in everybody else, and it increases as we age. But in his brain, he had a young brain, and I think he died in his late 70s.
Mm. What did he die of?
Something with his arteries, I think.
Yeah, it was. And I'm pretty sure he was a diabetic.
Mm, okay, yeah. Okay. But I'm curious about his brain, too, why his brain was so young. Cool fact about Einstein, he slept 10 hours every night.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
So what happens at the age of 30 is our brain begins to atrophy. Mm. So it begins to get thinner and thinner. Mm. Okay, our cells begin to die. And essentially, you know how you were talking about there's your brain mm-hmm. and then there's your skull mm-hmm. and then there's a thin space there. Mm. That space becomes thicker and thicker because your brain gets smaller and smaller. Hmm. It shrinks. Mm. And you can see this. I might have to put it on Instagram and go through like a carousel of showing the image, an MRI image of a 30-year-old brain, maybe a 10-year-old, 30-year-old. And you see it's just a tiny thin layer. As you get older, it gets thinner and thinner. There's a bigger space there. Hmm. And that's what essentially leads to neurodegeneration because you're losing gray matter of your brain.
Mm.
So if his was able to remain thick, one of the reasons may be because he was sleeping 10 hours a night.
And using his brain, right?
Using his brain. Mm. And I think it's when you said he's got maybe a bigger or larger parietal lobe, I'm not sure if that means he'd be more intelligent. However, I think that if you've got a larger any lobe, that means that you've got more brain cells, more to use.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter maybe where it is. You know, if it was in the occipital lobe, would that mean that you'd have better eyesight or better visual processing? Which, you know, if you do scans on the brains of Major League Baseball players, I'm pretty sure you would because they've got the best visual processing in all sports and the best visual acuity.
Hmm.
And that's where your brain processes information. So I think that would be interesting.
Mm. Wow. Fascinating. How you feeling?
I'm ready for some coconut
water. Let's get some hydration.
Let's do it.
Hey, good session. That was nice. All right, Luisa, I read something cool the other day, and I would love to know your thoughts on it. So a man named Roger Sperry, he won a Nobel Prize in medicine. He said that 90% of the nutrition and stimulation of the brain is generated by the movement of the spine. What is your research? What do you know about spinal health as it relates to brain health?
Well, that's interesting because our nervous system, which governs everything we do, is comprised of the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system.
Mm.
But our central nervous system is the brain and the spinal cord.
Mm.
And the peripheral nervous system is all of the nerves that comes off of the spine.
Okay.
And so when you say that it's involved in movement, I actually, the reason I teach what I teach, and a lot of the time, so we have a neuroathletics coaching certificate, and we teach people about the spine and the fact that everything is brain first, spine first, or central nervous system first. If you're going to produce any action, whether it's a throwing a ball or catching a ball or kicking a ball, it all comes from the brain.
Hmm.
The brain sends a signal down. You'll make a thought in the frontal part of your brain. The frontal lobe will send a signal to the motor cortex.
Hmm.
Motor cortex then sends a signal to the upper motor neurons and then goes down to the lower motor neurons, which go along the, you know, the spinal cord. And then it sends a signal to your arm or your foot.
Hmm.
And that's called a top-down process because it happens from the top down, and that's how our motor system is comprised. But if we're talking about the bottoms up, that's our sensory nervous system, and there's the spinal cord is involved with that as well.
Hmm.
So when he said that everything is, what was it? He mentioned the spinal cord.
Yeah, 90% of the nutrition and stimulation of the brain is generated by the movement of the spine.
I'm not sure about the nutrition part,
but
yeah, definitely the brain is definitely stimulated that way.
You reminded me of something, and this is like away from kind of like performance and everything, but are you familiar with the studies done by Benjamin Libet in the 70s? It was all about free will.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a study where he basically had participants put on, what was it, the EEG, and he told them to actually, I think, touch a pen or move their finger. To like when they made the conscious choice to move their finger to note it, right? To note the time that they made the conscious choice. And what he found
and I'm super oversimplifying this, but what he found was there was brain activity before the individual was consciously aware that they wanted to move the finger. So I guess in layman's terms, the brain decided first, and then the person was aware that they wanted to move it. So you say brain first. That's what it reminded me of, brain first. This study is all about free will, and it's been replicated. Some people have contested it, but it's a super like staple study on whether free will actually exists or not. Yeah. Some people say free will doesn't exist, but free won't exist.
So my primary modality as a neurophysiologist, we use EEGs. Mm. Generally, you're trained to look at epilepsy, and you do that through looking at the functionality of the brain, seeing where something's going wrong. We have to use an EEG. Mm. And I remember passing by so many cases in the scientific literature around so many scientists are trying to pinpoint when movement takes place through EEGs. Mm. And so, yeah, if it takes place, if the frontal lobe, which is the CEO of our brain, responsible for decision-making and all of our cognition, if that's what says, okay, I want to throw a ball, and then that sends a signal to the motor cortex, but what activates that part? And a lot of people think it comes from our surroundings. Mm. But then that's also a sensory response. Mm. So people are trying to snapshot it in time.
Yeah. Consciousness is a tricky one. I don't think we found the source of that one yet.
No. I think Kanye West is actually trying to find it.
Is that right? Yeah. Is that really his thing, what he's trying to do?
I think he's trying to do that, yeah.
Okay. He might, you never know.
Look, he might do that.
He can do many things, that's for sure. What's the best diet for brain health?
That field is so controversial because you can never please anybody. Mm. So there was a huge study done on Alzheimer's disease patients. And first of all, what they found was that people with Alzheimer's disease, if you just account for diet, meaning that if you just fix up somebody's diet in terms of if they've got Alzheimer's disease, you can reduce the progression of Alzheimer's disease by 60%.
Wow.
So just adjusting for diet is a huge thing. Oof. Now,
what kind of diet?
Well, this was the MIND diet, and that's the most widely studied diet for the brain. So it's the Mediterranean DASH diet.
Yep. Gotcha.
And what it consists of, which might surprise you, is most of it, around 70%, is fruits and vegetables, legumes. Then it moves into fish, healthy fats, olive oil, and still a little amount of red meat.
Okay.
So it's not this ketogenic diet. Mm. It's not this whatever carnivore diet. Mm. What is the MIND diet? It's literally the Mediterranean diet. Wow. Yeah, not too much red meat, but a lot of fish. Mm. And I think that's mainly because if you take a microscope and you shine it on a piece of salmon, people think that the salmon is EPA and DHA, which is omega-3 fatty acids, really good for the brain. But it's also comprised of B vitamins, so many other things that are fantastic for a healthy performing brain. Mm. So
yep.
I think we focus too much on what not to have. You know, sugar's bad and alcohol's bad, but we neglect to focus on what we should have, and that's the micronutrients responsible for different things in our brain, especially mitochondria. Mm. Mitochondrial health is a big one.
The powerhouse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, diet. Listen, so many diets, and everybody's, it's a religion, you know, people's diets are a religion. You know, for me, it's like, what I've learned from studying diet, that's, you don't have to be vegetarian, you don't have to be pescatarian, you don't have to be fruitarian, be a flexitarian.
I like that.
You know, be flexible. Because also food creates stress. You know, there's this thing, not anorexia, but orthorexia, where it's a disorder. You know, anorexia is based on the quantity of food. Orthorexia is based on the quality of food. Where people they're obsessed with eating healthy food, and they get sick. Mm. It leads to nutrient deficiencies and isolation, and it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Nutrient deficiencies are big, and people think that I don't need to have any of this. I'll just get it in a supplement, but it's not the same thing.
Mm. Yeah, it's not the same thing as the food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. In your studies, have you read anything about turmeric?
There's a lot of clinical data showing the effectiveness on inflammation. So I think we just have to be careful with how we're consuming it. Mm. And from what I've read, it's more so comes down to the actual, you know how you can buy turmeric? Mm-hmm. It's that instead of just having the powder itself.
Mm.
You know, in all honesty, I think the biggest thing that we're not doing, and I'm actually guilty of that today, mm-hmm. is hydrating.
Okay.
Something so basic, right? Something so basic, and you're just about to have water. some coconut water. But our brain is comprised of fat and water. There's only a small percent that's comprised of, you know, proteins and everything else. But wow, water, 70%. So, okay, what does that mean? That means we need to be hydrating. There are so many studies that show that just a mere 2% dehydration can lower our cognitive performance by like 20%.
Mm.
So hydrating is really important, in particular, electrolytes.
Okay.
So we just went into the sauna, you were sweating. When you sweat, you're not just sweating out water, you're sweating out electrolytes, which are sodium, potassium, magnesium, selenium. You're replacing it with coconut water, natural electrolytes. But a lot of people aren't doing that. They just think, why do I need electrolytes? I'm not doing anything. But your brain, in order for your brain cells to fire together, there's around 87 billion neurons in the human brain.
Wow.
In order for them to produce a signal or produce an action potential, it does this through this pump, and it's called a sodium potassium pump.
Mm.
And they are electrolytes. Sodium and potassium are electrolytes. We've got chloride. We've got all of these different sodium channels, everything in our brain that are responsible for keeping our brain thriving.
Mm.
So we need to be replenishing it.
Mm.
And in fact, I just bought, about a week ago, I bought this bottle that is it's a gallon.
Okay. Oh, big one.
So, and it's got a measuring thing on the side.
Yeah, I carry one around too.
Yeah. And so I drink it so I know, okay, I've had half a gallon of water today.
Gotta measure it.
Yeah.
Gotta measure it or else you forget. Mine is like a bright pink.
Yeah.
So I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing. And I travel. You've just traveled as well. I'm traveling to Australia tomorrow, so I'm like over-indexing on hydration.
Okay. Okay. So how much water should we drink a day?
In my opinion, it should be a gallon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're LeBron and you're maybe going into the water, into the sauna, and you're also working out and he's very tall, maybe he's having more than a gallon.
Yeah. Got it. Tell me about protein, because you, correct me if I'm wrong, advocate for more protein diet, higher protein diet?
Yeah, the RDA is not adequately equipped for having enough protein.
Hmm.
So if you have a look at women, they're getting sarcopenia, they're getting osteoporosis. And if you look at how much protein they're having, they're probably having like a third of what they need on a daily basis. So longevity of life, there's many things involved, okay? But one of them is having adequate muscle strength.
Mm.
And your muscles are longevity organs. They house a lot of mitochondria. Mitochondria are the energy production part of the cell. But not just that, they're responsible for so much more. One of the things they do in terms of brain health is they secrete hormones, and they're called myokines, they're muscle-based proteins.
Mm.
They get secreted from the muscle and they go up to the brain. There's also, they connect to different areas of the body, and they help that part of the brain. And what happens as we get older, for these muscles to not die off, for us to be able to sustain that, we have to be feeding them with the nutrients they need.
Okay.
And they need protein to survive.
Mm.
And I forget what the RDA is, but I know it's way too low. Mm. But the recommendation that I've had from the experts that I've been speaking to is you should be aiming for around 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight.
Body weight, okay. Wow.
Yeah. And when you think about that, that's a lot. You know, you may think it's a lot, but you have to really, really be eating protein.
Is there a difference between plant protein and animal protein?
There is. And it comes down, because that's the questions that I used to ask too. And the quality of the protein. So protein isn't just protein. It's made up of amino acids. And apparently during the plant protein, you're not getting the same amount or adequate amount of leucine and BCAAs when branched chain amino acids when you're having plant protein.
Okay. So, and that goes for hemp protein, pea protein, yeah, all the plant.
All of the plant. Okay. It just doesn't uptake as fast and as quality as a whole protein does. Mm. So you're already not going to get the same amount of protein from protein powder as what you would with maybe a piece of steak. Mm. But let me tell you, when I say that, free willingly, the plant-based people come after me and they attack me with their clinical studies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I'm a plant-based guy. I feel a little like, okay.
Yeah. You know, but you're great. I don't know. Where are you getting your protein from?
You know, fish.
You just said you're a plant-based guy.
Plant-based, not fully based. It's based in plants, but I'd say more pescatarian than anything else. Wild salmon and sardines. My only thing is like, you know, I have freaking mercury and what we're doing to the oceans. So, but I do think.
But not from where you're from. Are you getting like
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, because that's a lot of people complain about it, you know. But I do think the pescatarian with the omega-3s and the fish and astaxanthin and it's just, I don't know, it's like a superfood.
It is.
Yeah.
It's scary. I love red meat.
Okay.
So I'm a red meat, but I'm also I'm Greek. So yeah, my parents
were now.
Born and raised in Cyprus. So I've been brought up very Mediterranean. I have a lot of olive oil and I'm very much the epitome of the Mediterranean diet. So I'm having lamb. I just don't eat pork, but I'm having all of the, I'm having meat, I'm having fish, I'm having all of it.
Okay. And do you try to go for like organic?
I do. You know, I live in New York. I try and do all of my shopping at Whole Foods. Mm. When I go to Australia, my diet is so much cleaner. I lose weight when I go there. Mm. And I think it's got to do with the quality of the food.
Okay. Yeah, probably. You know, I don't know if you ever heard this before, but I looked it up. Apparently it's a thing. But when I eat red meat, I get nightmares.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
eating it close to bedtime?
A few hours. But I did notice if I eat it earlier in the day, and I don't eat it, I haven't eaten it in a while, but earlier in the day, I'm okay. But I think it's got to do something with the digestion that's creating these freaking crazy nightmares.
Yeah.
And it's a thing, apparently. Like other people, if they eat red meat or I think cheese, certain foods create nightmares more than others.
That's interesting. I don't get nightmares.
No.
But that's... The only time that I would get a nightmare is if I fall asleep maybe on a heavy stomach. So maybe that's your right.
Yeah. The body's working hard. Stress
is number one, yeah.
Yeah. So I know you work with athletes and it's incredible work. Like I'm a nerd when it comes to biohacking, and I think I've bought pretty much every brain optimization device. I had these headphones, like these Halo headphones. And it sends electrical pulses. I've done like the Blaze Pod. I've stood on one leg to brush my teeth with the opposite hand in order to create, like Jim Quick, I think, had this method. But I've done a lot of weird stuff to try to optimize my brain. Mm. What have you found are like the best brain exercises that we can do?
So I call it neuroathletics
training. Love that.
You know, so that's my company. But basically when you look at the best exercises for the brain, you've got aerobic exercise, which is you're running, you're cycling. You've got strength training, resistance training, which is your weights. And then you've got this other field, which is like neurocognitive training. And we call it neuroathletics training, where it's involved in stimulating the different senses. So you've got hand-eye coordination, memory, reaction time. You've got all of these little skills that get neglected as we get older. When we're younger, we're running after the ball, right? So we're getting that hand-eye coordination. Like, can you remember the last time you touched a ball? Like a tennis, an actual like tennis ball or a basketball or something?
Yeah, for me yesterday, I have but it's rare, like I think for most people, but I'm a nerd, so I have a tennis ball that I walk around with.
So we lose this as we get older, and there's different areas in the brain responsible for these things. So we've got, it's so easy, anybody at home can practice it. Just get two tennis balls, start throwing it to the wall and catching it, because you're cupping the ball. So you're getting You're getting grip, you're getting hand-eye coordination, you're getting reaction time, you're getting visual training because you have to see where the ball's going and catch it. And it's just so stimulating. And you realize like how stimulating it is because your brain is like, where have you been all my life? And in fact, there's a wonderful study that was done in the journal Nature, and they showed that you can actually grow the gray matter of your brain through hand-eye coordination exercises with tennis balls.
Wow.
Was that, I know studies on juggling.
It was juggling,
It was juggling?
Yeah.
Okay. But that one seems cool. Are there any like studies on that? Like throwing it against the wall and catching it? And
well, that's what we're doing at Neuroathletics,
Okay.
Yeah. So it's done over a 7-day period. So you have to be doing it every day for about 10 to 15 minutes a day. And you know, what we've found is just amazing. You can, there's a little area of your brain. It's not part of the brain. It sits under the brain. It's called the cerebellum. It means mini brain in Latin. And it's beautiful, but it's actually really, it's involved with coordination and center of mass. So it basically dictates where we are in space and time. And it's a beautiful part of the brain that also gets neglected. So with my father in 2019, he had a stroke. And so I get him to do things like stand on one leg and throw the ball against the wall. And it's just, even my, you know, my 40-year-old brother, you know, struggles to do that. So anyone can be doing this. So easy, so cheap, yet so effective.
And get into that, get into the benefits of balance, because I know falling is a big fact, you know, cause of death.
So as we get older, there's a huge rapid increase in death or all-cause mortality if you break a hip. So if you are 70, 75, 80, whatever that is, and you fall down and you break your hip, you're accelerating your race to death, really. So that's why we speak about having adequate amounts of protein and having good bone health. You know, bone health, you know, you've got to have a lot of protein for strong bones. It's not just calcium, and you got to have a lot of collagen as well. And so to maintain this, well, what do we do? A, if we fall, we should ensure that we're falling on hard bones so we don't break anything. B, we've got to have great stability. Stability in how we walk and how we move. And part of our protocols at Neuroathletics, if you're on the longevity protocol, you're doing a lot of stability work, standing on one leg, doing one, you know, if you're doing a deadlift, you're doing it with one leg.
Dang, so this is what you do in New York? This is like the facility and everything is in New York? Dang, I gotta come by and try this out.
Yeah, you definitely, oh, you'll never be the same.
Yeah?
Your brain might grow so big, it'll just pop out of your head.
My head's already big, so, you know, I don't want to be walking around like the cone heads. You remember that movie?
Yes.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
So you mentioned collagen. You said something about calcium. I'm wondering, let's talk about supplements. What supplements do you take and what supplements should most people look into and to take?
The two best supplements that anyone should take. Number one is creatine. So creatine is already naturally occurring in the body, and it can be found in red meat as well and other, you know, liver, beef liver. People used to think that, oh, I'm not taking, I don't need to take creatine. That's just for the body to help our muscles grow. It's very, very prominent in the brain. And it's involved in the, it's involved in the ATP cycle. So energy production of a cell. And we need this because it depletes as we get older. So creatine isn't just good for the body, it's good for the brain. So I'm having 5 grams per day, which is the sweet spot. You can go up from there. That's a moderate amount.
Creatine monohydrate.
Creatine monohydrate.
There's a few types, right?
It's the most widely studied and safest supplement on the market. And so I take that just before I go to the gym. Helps me lift better and perform better. But I'm also giving it to my dad.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old is your dad?
He is 71. And like I said, he had a stroke, which, so yeah, we're doing a lot to help his brain energy metabolism, which is where creatine's involved in. Second thing is omega-3 fatty acids. So it comes from fatty fish like mackerel and sardines and salmon. And it's comprised of EPA and DHA. And the DHA is more prominent, its benefits are more prominent for the brain, and EPA is extremely beneficial for the heart. But when combined at a dosage of 2 grams per day, 2 grams of each. Mm. So all up EPA, DHA, you're having 4 grams a day.
Okay.
It's been shown to do marvelous things. One thing is it has the ability to clear out these toxic proteins that are built up in the brain. It's called amyloid beta.
Mm.
And amyloid beta is one of the hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease. So when you clear it out through sleep, sleep is one way to clear it out, but also through EPA, DHA, that's amazing. So wow. It also helps with cell membrane fluidity. So your cells need to move around in the body and in the brain. And if they don't have good fluidity around them, they're just going to mush. It's going to be harder for them to move around.
Okay. So creatine and like a fish oil or just eat fish.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
The only reason why, if you said, but why can't I just eat fish? Some of the EPA and DHA gets stripped out of it if it's farmed fish.
Okay.
So you need to be supplementing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
And then just doing, your B vitamins as well. It's super, super beneficial for the brain.
Okay. Awesome. Creatine. Yeah, I gotta get my dad on that, on the creatine bus. I'll take creatine.
Yeah.
I know it's a nootropic and obviously it helps with bone density, muscle, all that good stuff. And I haven't seen anything bad. The only thing I will say, when I got my blood work done, and it's not creatine, it's my creatinine.
Okay,
levels were a little high.
Okay.
Don't know if it was because of the creatine. Maybe I was dehydrated that day. I don't know. But I think there's some correlation.
Without understanding all the other LFTs, it's okay.
Yeah, got you. All right, let's do something fun. So this game I like to call the five best. And so I'm just going to give you five things and you tell me what the best of them is for you in your life, right? What was the best advice you ever got?
Oh, gosh, you're really putting me on the spot there. Let's come back to that one.
Okay, best book you ever read.
So I would have to say The Body Keeps the Score and The Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav.
Okay.
Yeah.
Best investment you ever made.
In myself.
Okay.
I mean, I could say some others, but it's been in myself.
Best time in your life.
Childhood, but also 2019 in New York City.
Okay. What's the best quote you ever heard?
The mind is what the brain does.
I like that. Okay. And let's go back to the best advice you ever got.
Oh, geez. I look at I look to my father and my grandfather. However, I'll quote something that my mother said. She gave me some advice, and it was when I first moved to New York City, and she said, you need to ensure that you've got the education and the fortitude to keep your pockets full and not rely on anybody else. That was when I first moved to the States. So that's always been ringing a bell. I'm like, okay.
Such good advice.
Yeah.
Self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome. Luisa, the last question is the magic wand question. I ask everybody the magic wand question. And the magic wand question is, if you could wave a magic wand at the world and tomorrow, whatever wish you made when you woke up would be granted, what would your magic wand wish be?
That illnesses like cancer and neurodegeneration didn't exist.
We'd all be healthy, free, and happy.
Exactly.
Luisa Nicola, thank you so much for being in Sauna Sessions. This was amazing. You dropped a lot of jewels and wisdom and knowledge and science on us today.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me.
So good. Thank you.